Just as a heads up, today's episode does discuss eating disorders. If that's not something that you are comfortable listening to right now, I suggest that you put this episode on hold and come back to it when you feel comfortable. Hi everyone, and welcome to this week's episode. My guest today is Roz Purcell, who is a presenter, content creator, and founder of The Hike Life. Roz began her career as a model, but it was only after she quit the profession and started her hugely successful food blog, Natural Born Feeder, that her career really took off. After developing a passion for hiking, Roz founded the Hike Life Walking Group, which to this day sees Roz work with guides to introduce Irish people to the wonders of their nation's natural landscape. Roz has also released 3 cookery books to date, and in 2023, she released her next bestseller, The Hike Life, 50 Favorite Hikes in Ireland. Roz, welcome to the podcast. I am so happy that we've managed to get you on. It's been a long time coming, and you are joining me from beautiful Ireland, I'm imagining. You've got a poster of Tipperary behind you, so I'm going to guess.
Yeah, so I live in Ireland. I live in Dublin, but I'm originally from Tipperary. And yeah, I guess anyone who does follow me knows that I love to promote Ireland. It's a great spot to holiday. So anyone who's listening, you should come over. We have some of the best mountains and yeah, it's absolutely gorgeous. You'll just need to bring a rain jacket. I'll be honest with you.
As many people say, there is no such thing as bad weather. There's just bad clothing choices.
Exactly. Have you ever come to Ireland?
Yes, I have. Because obviously I did my collections with Primark. So I was there a lot. I was in Dublin a lot. I've actually toured Ireland as well when I was in the musical. So I did Derry. We did Dublin, Derry. We also did, where else did we do in Ireland?
Did you do Galway?
No, we didn't do Galway. I would have loved to though. Honestly, you make me want to jump on a plane or jump in a car and come to Ireland in a heartbeat. Like everything about your content screams, I want to be there right now and I want to experience everything you're doing.
When you have time off, I'll be your tour guide, your personal tour guide for Ireland.
Please. Oh God, I would love it. Yeah, it feels like you just have this knack of really selling Ireland in the best way possible. I mean, tour guide is putting it lightly. You are an amazing saleswoman for the country.
I'm also very good at reading the weather. So I will put a little caveat there. Do you know what I mean? I'm very good. And because I live here, when I see that there's going to be a good day, I can go straight away and see something and get it in really good light. So yeah, do still bring your raincoat after watching my content. It looks very sunny.
Now look, let's start at the very beginning in the world of Julie Andrews, lol. Because I know that being Ireland's best tour guide wasn't your initial role in your career. You did start out as a model, and I actually first became familiar with your content when you sort of then transitioned into talking about that shift away from modeling and your journey to self-love and body confidence and all those things. So I really feel like I've seen you go on this beautiful journey of coming to where you are right now, but I'd love to go back and like I said, start at that place, because modeling is a tough world, and I'm absolutely sure that it shaped that initial phase of your career and who you were and how you felt about yourself. So I wondered if you could talk to me a little bit about that first.
Yeah, so just to give some background, I grew up on a farm in Tipperary. Our house that my family still live in only got Wi-Fi last year, so it's the middle of nowhere.
Stop.
And yeah, I grew up watching America's Next Top Model, and I absolutely loved it. I just couldn't get over that there was another world. That obviously I had grown up on a farm, we were very remote. There was this really glamorous lifestyle people could have in America, and they got to wear loads of makeup and go to photo shoots. So as a very young teenager, like 13, 14, I loved that show. So then my goal, I think really when I was in school, was just to get to go to college in Dublin, to go to a city. I know I sound super naive. I really, really was. And it was my first week of college and I got scouted by an agent. I went to a local shopping center and I got asked to be in a modeling competition. So I was about 17, just about turned 18 when that happened. And I absolutely loved modeling. I thought it was so fun, so exciting. Being that young and getting your hair and makeup done, getting to try on all these wedding dresses and, you know, just doing all these fun shoots. And I really, really enjoyed it. And I think it was about a year later, it then led me to do Miss Universe Ireland, because a photographer said to me, you should really try and go for Miss Universe Ireland. Back then, Miss Universe Ireland, like pageants, were quite a big thing. It was seen as kind of a good stepping stone into kind of the modeling world. So I entered it. I didn't win the first year, but being super confident. And, you know, I think just at, I was at a stage in my life and, you know, 18, maybe going on 19 at that stage, where if someone rejected me, I didn't take it personally. Like, I was like, no, it's okay, I'm super confident. So I went back and I won. I went off to Miss Universe, which was held in Las Vegas, had a phenomenal time, made loads of friends, and just had really, really enjoyable experience. Like, modeling for me was everything I had imagined. And then I modeled abroad, and that's when everything changed. I think that's when I started to realize I physically wasn't built naturally to be a model. I was, you know, hitting my 20s and my weight was fluctuating. I was really, really isolated, really lonely. I was modeling in America, in South Africa, in South America. And I just completely lost contact with pretty much everyone at home because I was struggling so much with my weight. And that's, I think, when I kind of saw the reality of modeling. And, you know, there was still some kind of similar moments to America's Next Top Model, like when the agency makes you cut your hair off and dye it red because you're Irish. And you're like, now I see why they were all crying in their transformations. But it went from something that I really enjoyed and I couldn't believe I was getting the opportunity to do it. And it was really fun, really sociable, to being an extremely lonely job. And I had obviously at that stage taken a year out of college. So I had kind of risked my degree to go off and model abroad, and also all my friends. Like, I pretty much lost all my friends when I moved away, because not only was I at the other side of the world, and it was, you know, it was the starting of social media, but like, there wasn't so many different ways to communicate with people. And, you know, they all probably thought I was having such a great time over there, when in fact, like, I was just sitting in my room for most of the day trying not to eat. So yeah, it was a whirlwind. It was a bit of a roller coaster.
Trying not to eat sounds so miserable. Yeah. And I think that, like, yeah, when it comes to the modeling world, and I definitely grew up watching America's Next Top Model, it is such a polarized world. You have this like ultimate glamour where it looks like the most dreamy job. You're flying here, there and everywhere. You're wearing glamorous clothes. You're hanging out at cool parties. But there definitely is this huge underbelly of pretty toxic behaviors, bullying, you know, very damaging stuff that for most models who are, as you were, in their young, you know, late teens or young 20s, it's such a pivotal time in your life. And to be experiencing those things can be immensely, you know, like I said, damaging to your growth and your self-confidence. And, you know, I'm sad that you had such a terrible time. And I think that, you know, it definitely sounds as though it wasn't ideal, but I definitely, having followed you, know that there was a journey out the other side of that. And there was, I guess, for you, kind of a catalyst or a tipping point moment where you were like, enough is enough. I'm not going to do this anymore. So what was that like? What was that moment for you?
Well, just to give a little bit more context to the before, and going back to your point there, even about bullying, like, I was put in houses with loads of models and some of them were nice, but I have like specific memories of like groups of them taking out my portfolios and looking through them and like laughing, because, you know, obviously coming from Ireland, it may not have been such a high fashion place as they had maybe have grown up in New York or Canada. And even being on a shoot in Italy and the models just like blatantly being like, you're not the normal size, you're not as small as us, what are you doing here? And bullying me for the entire weekend. And that was actually the final shoot when I said I wouldn't model abroad anymore, because it happened that people were just kind of so mean in the industry. So when I got home from, in my mind, failing being a model abroad, that's when my eating disorder really, really started. Before that, when I was kind of modeling abroad, because I was moving so much, I was kind of in this very bad cycle of binging and purging. And then I was modeling abroad for a year and a half, 2 years. And when I got home at 21, 22, I just felt like such a failure. It's like everything came together and the purging just constantly took over. I just became a different person. And I left being a really confident, fun, you know, happy person who found enjoyment and everything, to coming back being an absolute shell of myself, having no confidence whatsoever and hating myself. So I developed a really severe eating disorder when I got home. And then that kind of was thriving for a long time. And, you know, it was also during the time when society as a whole really congratulated women who were small. So like my body at the time when I would do photo shoots, it was like, you know, wow, you look great. I was being praised for being an absolutely like very small version of myself. And, you know, that wasn't natural because people would have seen me before I left for abroad and in the previous years, because I'd done plenty of Irish press and photo shoots. Like I had clearly changed and I was absolutely tiny. There was a lot of that for a long time where I was being extremely praised for being a very, very small version of myself. And that was through extreme, very, very, very low calorie diet and overtraining to a crazy amount. I'm like, Jeannie, where did I have the time? My
honestly,
God.
Yeah. Same journey here. So like, yeah. I completely understand, yeah, what you were going through.
And I'm like, even to get to the gym once in a day now, I'm like, Jeannie, the effort, like I'm wrecked. Anyway, so
Yeah.
And like, I was in a really like bad state in terms of like I had palpitations constantly, like heart palpitations. And I just thought that was kind of a normal thing to have. And obviously, in later years when I did recover from an eating disorder, I don't get them at all anymore. So to go back to what was the tipping point, at the age of about 25, 26, my sister, who I'm best friends with, she was 3 years older than me. So she was about 28, got diagnosed with cancer, a really rare form of chronic myeloid leukemia. We lived together at the time. I was living in an apartment in Dublin. She was living with me, working in PR. And yeah, I remember we had got back from a holiday together and she wasn't feeling well. She was like covered in bruises. And me being a typical Irish sister, I was slagging the shit out of her. I was like, why are you covered in bruises? Like, you know, what are you up to? So I convinced her she should go to the doctor because I'm very different. I'm a hypochondriac. So when the doctor sees me, he must go, there's money bags back again. I'm always getting my bloods done, always kind of checking up on stuff. So I convinced her to go get her bloods done. Within about 2 days, she had a diagnosis of leukemia. But thankfully, she'd caught it quite early. But chronic myeloid leukemia is kind of an incurable form of cancer. So she has it pretty much for life. She's actually currently in remission at the moment, but it's a condition that you can kind of manage. However, I think at the time, you know, back then we didn't know that. It's only now that I suppose science has come on so much. There's so many different forms of medication. But back, what is it now, almost 9 years ago when she got the diagnosis, you know, for my family, it was a really big shock. And during her kind of few days when she was trying to get a diagnosis and going to specialist, I think the reality of her being so young, getting cancer, it kind of was the first time since my teenage years that I hadn't thought about myself and my body. Like I actually was like my eating disorder. I was so in my own head that when this happened to someone I love, my best friend who I live with, my sister, who I'm like the closest person to in the world, it's like I finally started to look at the world around me and not think about what I was eating or my body. And I think then just like going into consultation meetings with her and her doctors and the doctors being like, yeah, you've probably had this for a year and a half. Your body has been fighting it off really heroically. Like your body has been doing so much for you that you have managed to do so much. You were doing, I made her do an adventure race when we didn't know she had cancer. I was, you know, like we were training every day. So I think that was when I started to really look at body functionality and like, God, I've been treating my body like absolute shit. I've never even thought about how much my body does for me. Like my body's hanging on like a piece of thread here because I'm hardly eating and I'm training 3 times a day. So that was the tipping point for me to want to go get help. Because wow. I didn't want to treat my body like shit anymore.
Firstly, like I'm so sorry for your sister. And I think that must have been so immensely challenging. But I definitely relate to what you said about just having this moment where you realize that there is so much more to life than being thin. And it does sometimes take, and I'm going to use the analogy of like almost just being slapped around the face with reality, you know, reality bites and you suddenly go, oh my God, like what have I been wasting all of this time and energy for? And I think yours feels particularly sad in the way that it happened. And I'm like I said, desperately sorry for that experience.
My sister now is totally fine. You wouldn't even know. You know what I mean? Like we all kind of in a way forget. And like, as I said, she since last year now is kind of in a remission state, which is absolutely incredible.
Which is amazing.
She's flying. Yeah. And you know what? She was very, you know, like I always say, lucky to have escaped kind of that eating disorder culture. And she kind of treats her body right and rested when she needed to and didn't overtrain and ate well. So I always just think of the importance of that. Like her body was kind of able to fight something like this.
For sure.
So then when I started to go get help, and my first protocol was to go get therapy, it was definitely not like, I think anyone who has an eating disorder who has gone to get help was not a quick fix. No. There was a lot of times when I, you know, regressed, and there was a lot of times when I fell back into my eating disorder, and it was, I yo-yoed for a number of years until it kind of finally leveled out. And, you know, now I think I'm definitely at a stage where I could not even imagine going back that way at all. But I still do have the odd bad body day. And that's just, I think, a result of being brought up in a really toxic society of shaming women for changing bodies.
I think it's really good that you talk about this like kind of prolonged journey of recovery. I think that social media and the way that we speak about bodies in general, and particularly the shift that we've seen where people start to recognize the importance of things like rest and having a not so low body fat and, you know, being much more realistic in how they approach training and health, you know, it still does make it seem as though it's relatively quote unquote easy to just sort of, oh, just quit diet culture and, you know, start to love your body and it's going to be fine. And I think that something that I definitely really relate to in your journey, as it was the same in my own, is that it is such a roller coaster of a recovery process. And it's so important that we still talk about the days where, you know, you look in the mirror and you don't feel great and you have a day where you feel very triggered. And I completely agree that there is no part of me that ever wants to go back to where I was. And I know that that will never happen, but it doesn't mean that you don't have those days where you have little wobbles. Mm. And definitely that recovery process is so nonlinear. It's up, it's down, it's, you know, it's everything. It's very, like, I reference it as like a bit of a grieving process. You know, you're letting go of what you thought was the best version of you. And, you know, if you think back to yourself being on those photo shoots and being told, wow, you look amazing. Mm. And oh my God, your body, it's so incredible. Like, you have to let go of all of that. And there's a certain amount of sort of ego and pride that has to be lost in order for you to say, that was not my realistic self. Mm. And I think that that's really important that we do talk about that side of recovery, because it's something that I think a lot of people really struggle with.
And I always like to remember when, you know, I have a voice in my head being like, people preferred you when you were smaller. You know, I got so much praise around having this really ideal figure that I was absolutely no crack. Oh my God, I was starving the whole time. I was absolutely so moody. So I'm definitely a better person to be around now. Oh my God.
But isn't that half of it? Like, I was the most miserable person. Oh. Like, I had no social life. I was so also like desperately lonely. And I talk about that a lot. Like, my social circle became so small. I barely did anything. Like, it is a miserable existence. And all for what? So that, like, when I take a picture, I think I look good. Like, yeah, and really?
You really hit the nail on the head there. Like, my biggest regret about all of that is spending so much of my 20s isolating myself, saying no to opportunities, saying no to holidays or trips with my friends. And in that regard, actually losing a lot of friendships because I just didn't really want to be around people, especially when I was having, you know, a really tough time with my body, because I actually thought that everyone was judging me, when actually they just weren't, you know.
Talk to me about your recovery journey then. Like, what were some of the things that you found helpful in that process?
So I went to CBTE, and it's cognitive behavioral therapy enhanced. I'm actually not sure they use it anymore, because, you know, I still kind of go to therapy now and again. And I've heard from different therapists that maybe that's kind of a little bit more of a short-term fix, but it definitely got me going on the right path for sure. And a lot of my issues kind of really stemmed from obviously this huge sense of failure for not making it and dropping out of college to try and become a model and not succeeding. But also I had just developed this huge, I was such a control freak because I was controlling my food and everything around me was so out of control. My whole life was chaotic. I was living out of suitcases and flying here and there. And I wasn't in control if I got a job or if I didn't. Food was like the only thing I could control. And what I would do day to day was really, really control. So like I had to be able to also let go of that sense of control. And I am the most in the present person you'll ever meet now. And that's like, you know, aside from healing an eating disorder, whatever that therapist taught me along the way, to the point where it's kind of bad. Like when my boyfriend wants to plan something for tomorrow or next week, I'm like, oh, we'll just think about that tomorrow. And he's like, please, please plan ahead. So, and I rarely dwell on the past that much anymore. So there was a few things coming together that I healed at once, which was fantastic. So CBTE was really great. It was a great catalyst for me to start implementing small things of when I was maybe spiraling or when I was having a bad day, to bring myself back to the present moment. Having a sister going through cancer and going to appointments with her when she was getting her like bone marrow checked, going to all those really horrible procedures with her and seeing that was definitely a catalyst to kind of keep going. And yeah, I think possibly I actually also got a dog at the same time. So I always think Wilco definitely helped me a bit, because having this little dog that you had to take care of kind of would bring you back to the present moment quite a lot. And I think for me, a lot of my eating disorder was like bring me back and trying to be a bit more rational about situations, because I'd get very, very highly strung and very explosive and kind of, I say irrational, but I don't want to offend anyone who has eating sort of thoughts by saying they're irrational. To you at that time, they're extremely rational and you fear them. But it's now, I think, with a bit of perspective, I can look back and say my mind was just all over the place. So I would definitely say those were two really big contributors. And then leaving the modeling industry was another. I chose to walk away from it because I was at the stage where I was slowly putting weight back on and really struggling with that. And I'd go to a modeling job and, you know, they'd still have my old sizes out and they'd go, oh, we need a size up for Roz, and like screaming it to everyone. And like, you know, they didn't mean anything by that. But like to me, that was in my head, they were like shaming me. And I do have a specific memory of going on a shoot, and it was actually one of my last Irish shoots. And the client just, it's like she could not stop talking about how different I looked from the year before. And she just kept kind of insinuating how she just did not like the shoot. She was like, I just don't understand how you look so different from last year. Everything just doesn't look the same. And I just remember feeling so awful after that job and just being like, there's no way I can heal and do this together. So I made the decision to just kind of walk away, particularly just from, you know, high fashion photo shoots, runway and stuff, because they were the ones where it was very strict about your weight. And that was a tough call for me, because that was my biggest form of income. So then I kind of started to transition to social media, and I've been kind of sharing more about Natural Born Feeder, where I did a lot of recipes and stuff, and kind of regaining my love for food. So thankfully, that was the kind of side of the internet was growing at the same time. So I was able to kind of jump ship a little bit.
Yeah, you went on to share a lot of that journey online. Mm-hmm. And like I said, that was where I first became familiar with you, and definitely the Natural Born Feeder. I mean, I loved your blog. It was always like such a source of inspiration for food and for general, like, you know, Irish wellness. Yeah. and like a hug in a website. But I think that it's really interesting that you felt the confidence to share that journey online, having come from the modeling space where it's so, you know, about how you looked at other people. You were able to, I guess, take ownership of that narrative for your body, for what you chose to share, for how you chose to present yourself. So I'm interested in like that kind of that shift, and whether you felt like that also was part of your healing journey, like to be able to kind of, instead of having a photographer be able to capture you, that you were able to, like I said, control that narrative in a way and be able to present yourself in the way that you then felt comfortable with.
Yeah, I think you kind of hit the nail on the head there with saying like, I spent so long obviously being portrayed in photo shoots where I was already small, and then sometimes the photographer would make you smaller with Photoshop, and I would be like, how am I meant to live up to this picture? I don't even look like this picture. And I used to constantly feel if I was meeting people in person that I was letting them down. So for me, a big reason why I started sharing my journey online was to actually forewarn people. I have changed. You don't need to say this to me when you see me. I'm putting this out there now, what I look like, because I'm afraid to walk by people. I'm afraid to wear a swimsuit in front of people in case people go, oh my God, like she's got the stretch marks, she's got cellulite, whatever it is. I was so afraid of what people thought. And I know this may not seem like it was the best reason to share my journey online, but it gave me a sense of control over my body changing by me sharing it, not someone else going, oh, look at her, she's changed so much. Because that's what the internet was back then. Like, I remember there was a whole kind of just a one-page website built to my weight change after Miss Universe. And it was like a before and after, and it was all these comments. And that was such a catalyst for me to start my eating disorder when I got home, because I had such a sense of failure that I knew if something like that happened again, I don't know what I would have jumped back into an eating disorder. So I wanted to kind of control my changing body. And thankfully, social media was there to do that.
That is awful. Like, I hate the internet sometimes. I love our job. I love what I do. And I have days where I'm like, oh my God, I feel like I'm putting so much good into the world. And I really feel happy with my role and my space on the internet. And then there are times where you come across something like you saying that, or other things that I've seen or read. And I'm like, people are so mean. Like, how could anyone in their right mind do that to someone? You know, some of the stuff that I see people say, I just think to myself, I could never ever find myself doing that about someone, to someone. Like, how do you sleep at night? And I guess it kind of leads me on to my next question, which is like, you know, you've been online for a long time, probably is the same amount of time that I have. And it is a difficult space to exist in sometimes. It has its massive pros, but it also has huge cons. And I just wondered how you found being online and growing up, I guess, a bit online, and, you know, the highs and lows that come with it.
Yeah, like, I definitely wouldn't recommend growing up online to people, because, you know, sometimes people like a version of you that you've grown out of, and, you know, they don't like the new version of you. And I think I'm at an age now, I'm 33, that I don't take that personally. Not everyone is on the same journey as me. They might be stuck back in time, or they might be ahead of me, and I might not be relatable to them anymore. And that's absolutely fine. So people can come and go. Like, it's, you're not trapped here, you know what I mean? And I'd rather people leave if they're not enjoying something. But I do think, like, when I was younger, I took online trolling and everything really bad. Like, I would take it really personally. I wouldn't be able to forget something if it was really bad for weeks on end. Now, I think I have an understanding that in order for someone to go online and leave something negative or get really angry, something is going off in their life. And I always think back to when I had an eating disorder and my head was all over the place and I was really angry and I hated myself. The things I would think about other people, because I had such a high standard of how people should live and how they should look, because I myself was holding myself to that standard. What I would think and how I would judge people was so not who I am. And I always think, you know, when I see people leave, now I would also never leave comments or anything like that. You know, I wasn't doing that. But now when I see people like who would leave comments or DM people horrible stuff, I'm actually like, there's something like there is going on with them. And I'm sorry, I'm not even wording this right, but like, I feel really sorry for them, that I or someone else, just by living my life, is really triggering you that bad that you feel the need to send me a nasty message. Now, I will say there is a difference between sending a troll message and holding someone accountable. I'm actually all on board, I think, for our industry, holding influencers, content creators accountable if they have done something, or if they're...
constructive criticism.
Exactly. Yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm. Or if they're being hypocritical on something, 100% agree with that. But I think when you're just sending off trolling messages, or, you know, giving out someone what they look like or how they live their life because it's different to how you would live your life, it's just stupid, like.
Yeah. It's such a waste of energy. And I... I'm definitely in the process of getting better at dealing with those. Like, it's a journey.
Well, what age are you now?
I'm 31.
Yeah. Oh, listen, 2 years would be grand, honestly.
Oh, yeah. Bring it on.
It was like 33. I just went, like, a light bulb went off and I was like, man, I don't give a shit anymore.
Oh, great.
And I think it's because as well, though, I'm definitely at a stage in my life where I just do not work with brands I don't like. And it's a bit like you. I'm very lucky to be in a position where I can say no to pretty much 90% of things. I post by things I really believe in. I will stand up for myself. I will, you know, when things are going on in the world, I'll call out. I'm not afraid to speak out about on any issue, even if I feel like it might jeopardize my career, because I'm just at that stage in my life where I don't care. So I think when you get there and you're really happy with what you're posting, what brands you're aligning with, and you have your values, anyone else that disagrees, you're like, man, I don't, just go off somewhere else then.
God, I'm jealous. I'm definitely getting there. I think, yeah, hopefully 33 is my age. I'm going to hold out hope for that. Yeah. I'll message you when I get there.
Yes.
But the thing is, it is a process. And I think one of the things that I find hard, not turning this into a personal therapy session or anything, but I did so much of my growing up online, like from the age of literally like 20. And I think back to that age. And I just think I've been very molded by being very present in the online space for the last 10 years of my life. And so in terms of my self-identity and who I am outside of that, I've had to become so much better at being very comfortable in who I am as myself before I then am comfortable with who I am and what I'm willing to now share with the world. I don't know. It's been a journey, but I really appreciate that you said it gets better, because boy, oh boy, I can't wait for that day.
But you know what? What you're saying back to there being like showing up as yourself because you're kind of trying to find who you are offline. See, I actually have quite a boundary with online now. So I used to share everything with everyone. Mm. And then I got to the stage where I realized I can actually choose what I share. I don't have to share everything. You know, I don't have to do that. People don't have a right to see every single part of my life. If I'm going through something that I'm not ready to talk about, I don't have to talk about it. If I, you know, I don't need to show people the interior of my house because, you know, we all need to make sure we're safe these days. I don't need to post in real time anymore because, you know, that's another safety issue or whatever. You know, I don't have to share every single part of my life. I can have a boundary. So I've actually in the past 3 to 4 years had a boundary with social media in that I don't share every intricate detail of my life. And that has really, really helped, because I feel like the more you share personally and the more you kind of divulge everything online, the more people want.
Yeah. And the more they have as ammunition to turn against you when, you know, the day comes where you're suddenly out of favor or you're not as popular or whatever it might be. Like I completely agree with you there. Like it almost gives people more ammunition.
I'm very lucky. Like people who follow me are just sound like, and this is it. Like, you know, a lot of people have been there from the start. A lot of people have left. And, you know, there is kind of even new people who've just joined me to like, look, I just want to travel Ireland. She also puts up random funny shit. And, you know, like, I don't need to know everything about her because she's adding value. Do you get me?
And you're just a great person. Like,
no, I wouldn't say that then, but I am.
Oh, no, you can't. You can't. I followed you for so long and I can tell you now I get good energy and I can just tell that you're a good person. Like you're just sound, like you said, to use the very Irish.
Well, I will say I'm a very, very honest and blunt friend. I'll just kind of say it as it is. You know what I mean?
But sometimes those are the best people because you know where you stand. Like my closest friends are so honest and that makes me feel so safe because I'm like, well, good, because I know where I stand with you.
Yeah. It's what I look for in friends as well. You know, just someone who's will say it as it is, because I think a lot of time with social media, like you said, you might grow up in an industry where you don't really know who you are. So it's always good to have people around you who just kind of put you back in your place a bit.
100%. We'll be back after this. Welcome back to Give Me Strength. Now, look, you talked about touring Ireland. We opened by talking about Ireland. So let's move on to being the queen of hiking in Ireland. Tell me about finding your love for hiking. Like, how did you go from this superstar model to now being, like I said, this incredible tour guide and travel blogger and, you know, finding your love for hiking?
So I actually grew up on a mountain, Sleepnamon in Tipperary. So my whole family, that's our family home, is still down there. So I would have hiked growing up quite a lot. And as I said, we didn't get internet in that house till last year. So if I wanted to entertain myself, I had to go hiking. And if I wanted to go on a date with a boy, because I didn't drive or anything, we would go for a walk in the mountains. So I have been hiking from an extremely young age, okay? So when I moved abroad, I actually did hike, you know, when I was traveling abroad. I always had a love for hiking. When it came to kind of getting an eating disorder in my 20s, I definitely focused more on the gym. I didn't really see hiking as a form of exercise for some crazy reason. And I think with everything, you know, going to healing my eating disorder kind of brought back my love of everything I had growing up, which was the outdoors, food, cooking, being around my family. So, yeah, it kind of coincided with, I like to say, just like me returning to my younger self after an eating disorder, like getting my personality back. So, yeah, about the age of 25, I kind of restarted hiking again and just traveling Ireland a bit more. And I was always really afraid when I had an eating disorder to not be in my routine. I always wanted to be in my house, have the same breakfast, go to the gym, have the same routine every day. I was afraid if I ever got out of that routine, that's when I would like fall off my diet, my way of life. So I made a really big effort while I was in recovery to break that. And so that's, I think, when the kind of adventuring and traveling around Ireland really took off.
And honestly, will never fail to be so surprised and in awe of some of the places that you manage to find and the locations that you shoot and shoot so beautifully, by the way, as well. It almost seems like there's just unlimited amounts of places to go, things to see, and you are so good at sharing, you know, those kind of more hidden gems. And like I said at the start of this conversation, it 100% makes me want to get on a flight and travel to Ireland straight away. But I think that for some people, there's still, I guess, a hesitation, particularly as a woman, to go hiking, especially in more kind of remote locations. So what do you think are some of the things that put people off from hiking, and how do you try and help people overcome those?
Yeah, like I have to say, going hiking as a female, if your friends are not going to go with you, you've no one to go with, that can be a really big barrier. Because, you know, look, I've grown up hiking up Sheevan Mon by myself. So I have a natural kind of confidence of being in the outdoors by myself. But would I say the same thing in a really built up area where there's mountains? Probably not. I will hike alone in the mountains I'm really familiar with. And I do see, like, look, we've had some horrific cases in Ireland of women being attacked alone, not even in a rural isolated area, but just being in a city when people, other people are around. So my big thing was actually going and doing like mountain skills courses. So I'm sure, you definitely have them in the UK as well, but they're weekend long courses that teach you all about navigation, all the gear you need, all the safety aspects. So I've done Mountain Skills 1, Mountain Skills 2, and I've gone on for my ML1 and ML2 to be as trained as I possibly can to be alone. Now, look, that's not going to protect you if someone's, you know, safety-wise, if someone else is on the mountain looking to cause danger, but that's definitely going to protect me when it comes to like knowing my navigation, being safe and handling myself on a mountain. Because as we know, you know, it can be as treacherous as the sea. But yeah, like when I've been training for my ML, there's a certain amount of logging you need to do as a solo hiker at nighttime. And I've made this point numerous times that it's really unfair for women, because like I don't have many people to go out with at nighttime. Like some of my friends aren't into hiking as much as I am. And of course, I'm going to be scared to go off and do some night navigation by myself as a woman. So there is huge barriers. And that's why I think it's really great. There's so many, and I know it's happening over in the UK, Wales and Scotland, where there's so many hiking groups coming out that people can join and kind of feel that element of safety. And I know for a woman, because I am one, it's the biggest barrier, being alone out there. So even with the hike life now, I'm starting to do these kind of evenings where lots of female hikers can arrive and just meet someone in their locality to have a new hiking friend that they also have a similar interest in the same area that they can go off with. Because it's, you know, it's one thing to like give people information on hikes, but it's another thing to actually get them in a community of people they can actually go out with.
Do you run your own hiking groups?
Yeah, so the Hike Life actually started as a hiking group, and it's still a hiking group. I don't do them as much anymore because I also do weekend radio, so I'm like literally work 7 days a week now. But so it's all free. It's ran by mountain leaders. So mountain leaders are people who are like they've done all the kind of necessary courses and they're qualified to be mountain leaders. And yeah, it's free for people to join, and they'll bring them to different parts of Ireland to just kind of bring them up safely on a trail and have a good experience, whether it's a first or they're an experienced hiker. And it's also a nice way for people to meet each other. So yeah, with the community, it really started as getting out and meeting people.
And you brought all of that into your book, The Hike Life, you know, your love for hiking and especially choosing your favorite hikes across Ireland. So if anyone's sitting there thinking, oh, she's really whet the appetite for wanting to get over to Ireland and do some hiking, tell me a little bit about the book.
So the book is, like what you said, it's my top 50 favorite hikes in Ireland, and it covers our four provinces. So you've Ulster, Leinster, Munster and Connacht. And it's basically like the most scenic hikes. Because I'm a girl who loves my views, because people are always like, how do you pick favorite? Like, what was the criteria? And I'm like, I love a good view. Like, I want to be rewarded after my hike. I'm not like traipsing up a mountain for 8 hours to see nothing. You know what I mean? I want to see something good. So yeah, and there's a really nice range of obviously beginner hikes right up to your really experienced hikes. And not only do I have all the information about the hikes, like, you know, everything you need to know about even where to park, can you bring your dog, a route description. There's also like where to go for food afterwards, the best wild swimming spot post hike, any fun, cool things or historical tours you can do nearby. So you can kind of make a full day itinerary out of it. And then the intro chapters are just full of useful information of what to pack, what to wear, and, you know, as a hiker, like really useful apps or websites for safety, for weather, for planning your hike as well.
I just love this kind of transition for you. And you know, it's been really lovely to have it across this conversation of seeing this complete shift into, I guess, reframing exercise, reframing how you choose to move your body, and then encouraging others to do the same. Like, we are seeing this shift in the fitness and wellness space of people really recognizing that there are so many ways in which they can move their body that are going to feel good and that are right for them. And I think hiking is one of those things that is having a bit of a moment. You know, I'm seeing so many people across my social channels that are choosing to go out hiking on the weekends and to really just make it a bit more of a, I don't know how to say this without sounding rude, as if it was never uncool, but it's becoming very cool.
It's becoming, you know what? So I started the hike life back in 2018, and it definitely wasn't that sexy back then. And then in lockdown, it kind of blew up, and thankfully I'd been kind of knocking around for a while with the hike life. So I had a huge amount of content to offer people, but it just became sexy all of a sudden. And you know what? I'm delighted because, you know, I was obviously posting hiking content on my own personal page and people were kind of like not really engaging with it, you know, which I didn't care because I was just showing off my weekends. But it's nice to see that exploring our outdoors and getting out in nature has become such a priority for people.
And it's so good for you as well. Like, there are so many aspects of hiking that I think are so beneficial for our health. So yeah, it is amazing that it's having its moment. Now, look, I wanted to finish by asking you if you could, because you've done your 50 favorites. And I know this is probably going to be a horrible question for you to answer, but if you had to pick your favorite hike from the book that people are really going to be hopefully enticed by to travel over to Ireland and do, which one would it be?
So because we're kind of talking to people who might just be coming over to Ireland to do it, I want to bring them to an area that I think offers not just a great hike, but also like it's a really one of my favorite parts of Ireland. So Dingle over in West Kerry, you have Mount Brandon, okay? And it's one of the largest mountains in Ireland outside of the McKillicuddy Reeks, which are also in Kerry, but it's a beautiful standalone mountain. And there's actually the route I discuss in the book, it's marked the whole way up by Stations of the Cross. So it's quite easy to navigate. It is tricky to get a good day up there, I'm not going to lie, but when you do, it's absolutely unbelievable. And at the summit, you can look across at all the Blasket Islands and the sun will set right there and it's just mind blowing. And then of course you're in Dingle. So there's just, Dingle is one of the best places in Ireland. Okay, if you want to have fun, you want to get to cool pubs, you want great food and you want scenery, it is the spot in Ireland. So in the book, I have all the locations in Dingle where you should visit. So it's something you could really make a weekend out of, get a great hike in and really kind of encapsulate yourself in like Irish culture.
It's also got a great name. Like, yeah, Dingle. How can you not be cool being called Dingle?
Yeah, actually, you know what? Because we're so used to the name. Yeah, now that you say it out of context, you're like, oh yeah, Dingle. It's like Jingle.
Yeah, Dingle. It's great. Everyone needs to go to Dingle. Oh, Ros, thank you so much. I just love chatting to you. It's so lovely to see someone who, I guess, yeah, has had similar elements of my own journey. And I really respect that whole kind of transition that you've gone through. And it's so lovely and so encouraging to see you in such a great place and just living your best life. So thank you so much for sharing that with me today. And yeah, I wish you all the best.
Thanks so much for having me.
So thank you so much for listening to today's episode. I'll be back on Friday for my Ask Alice. Again, if you have any questions for that, send us an email to the email that's in the show notes. If you are enjoying the podcast and you'd like to hear a little more from me, I am so excited to announce that I have just written my latest book, Give Me Strength, How I Turned My Back on Restriction, Nurtured the Body I Love, and How You Can Too. It comes out in July and is available for pre-order now. And it's the book I wish I had read when I was really struggling with body image and exercise addiction. And so if this sounds like something that might help you, you can find the link to get your copy in the show notes now. I'll be back next Wednesday for my next episode, and I look forward to speaking to you then. Give Me Strength is an Insanity Studios production.